Episode 230.
Define learn, right?
Well, if you've gone through the process and you've felt a lot of pain on the first one and a little less pain on the next one, and you're 10 in and you can figure this thing out in 5 minutes, but you're still charging an hour, did you get paid to learn?
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarket professionals, to Remarkable Results Radio and to episode 230, the Technician Roundtable, Part 2. I'm Carm Capriano. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. They're the reason you enjoy these interviews twice per week. When you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. With brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com. Let me thank a few new Facebook friends like Tom Roberts, Paul Danner, and Richard Krieger, and to my new LinkedIn connections, Wayne Fleshman, Christine Cecina, and Doug Hillmuth. Hey, glad we've connected. Hey, I love getting email. I read them all, and I reply. Reach out to me at carm@remarkableresults.biz. You may have an idea for a show or a guest request. I'd love to hear from you. Hey, the last Technicians Roundtable was a very highly listened to episode. It was recorded at Vision 2017 in Kansas City, and it was episode 206. When the thought to do a second roundtable was raised, Bob Hype, Pete Landry, and Matt Fonslow all agreed to convene again and keep tackling tough subjects from a technician's point of view. You may not agree with all we talk about, but it does make for expanded thinking and great talk radio. There are no right or wrong answers to the issues raised, but keeping the dialogue moving is so important to the future of our beloved aftermarket. There are over 20 key talking points in this episode. See the show notes for a list, remarkableresults.biz/E230. We ventured into silver bullets, the tech shortage or competency, getting paid for diagnostic time, augmented reality, technician pay, and so many more. Now, if you're a tech, I think you'll like the banter among Matt, Bob, and Peter. And if you're a shop owner or work in any other segment of the industry, you'll get a chance to hear what three technicians feel about some of our industry's opportunities and challenges. If you have any questions for these guys, just send me an email, as I said earlier, carm@remarkableresults.biz, or message me on Facebook. Bob Hype, Matt Fonslow, and Peter Landry are top diagnosticians that have a huge passion for the success and future of the aftermarket, and they love to have fun when they get together. Now here we go with Technicians Roundtable, Part 2. Hey everybody, welcome to Round 2 of our Technicians Roundtable. We were first together at Vision 2017. Boy, we had a blast. We put out a great episode. Thank you guys so much for that. And now I guess I'm ready for an onslaught of round two with Matt Fonslow, Pete Landry, and Bob Hype. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Carm.
How's it going?
Great, great. Matt, did I see that sometime in the last 2 or 3 weeks you were out on the East Coast somewhere?
I was. New York region for Toyota in the New Jersey, Pennsylvania area. Had me out to show them some stuff on Picoscopes.
Have a good time?
I had a very good time.
They put you up in a nice place, good food.
5-star across the board. I had a really good time.
Good for you.
On top of it, the field service techs that I was working with kind of welcomed me in as one of their own, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't really treated like an outsider. It's kind of nice.
Well, great, Matt. You know, when we were talking about putting this episode together and throwing around about 100 different talking points.
Literally.
There were so many. And I'm not even sure where we're going to go with this thing. And like we did the last time we were together, anything's open. So, you know, but let's start. Let's talk about this most, every podcast I do, everyone that I talk to, there's this thing about technician shortage. And I know we didn't cover it in episode, in Roundtable 1 with you guys. What, you guys are practicing, you hear it, you see it, you're connected. Is it tech shortage? Is it a competency issue? Talk to me, guys.
Definitely competency. there's plenty of warm bodies around, but are they capable? Are they competent? Are they good examples or good representatives of our trade? Not necessarily.
I have to say that I'm not necessarily seeing warm bodies being able to be utilized. I see a lot of people out hiring, just beating the pavement, looking for guys, even to fill a position. Not necessarily like a high-level guy. So I would have to say it's bold. But more so on the competency, because, I mean, obviously you could hire a temp service guy to do this, and he he wouldn't get anything done, right?
All right.
So, well,
I think that if you look at the average age of technicians, you can tell that there's definitely something on the incoming side as far as not as much as there used to be. But the reality is it goes across of the whole age spectrum as far as the competency. That is what I have seen when I go to shops to perform any kind of diagnostics or programming service for the shop.
Well, it's not even just the high-end stuff or
no,
you know, it's the quote-unquote technical stuff. It's, you know, we don't have a lot of R&R guys, and we need nuts and bolts people too.
Nuts and bolts doesn't just cut it anymore. It's a mat. You have to read these procedures. You have to follow. I mean,
you need to be able to read.
Or bring your wife to work day and have her read it. You know, I've always been a big fan of that. Most of the technical reading I do is Crystal's doing it, you know.
But like you guys are both saying, I mean, there's a whole situation out there that, I mean, there's not enough guys. There's not enough good guys. It's somewhat of a societal thing with blue collar working. I mean, if you don't have a college degree and you're not white collar, you're trash.
Well, or you've failed, or you didn't reach your potential.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And that was a paradigm, and I believe it may have started in the 90s when the government said, listen, we're going to be really good at math and technology and medical and science. Got to send your kids to college so that we can graduate everyone. We're at this point in time. I mean, look at what Mike Rowe is trying to do with carpenters and plumbers and electricians and welders. It's not just the auto mechanic side of our skilled trades. And so I ask you this question, maybe in a different format. The ranks coming up are not as deep or as wide as they had been when you guys got in it. And then you're also saying that, listen, the guys that are in it need to up their game. Yes?
Yeah, but I would go further than just that. I think it's also at the kitchen table. I think we have a lot of service industry members, whatever that may be. It doesn't have to be automotive repair. Sitting at the kitchen table with the kids, they're dirty, they're sweaty, and they're saying, don't do what I do. Get yourself a good education. Get yourself a good job. And the problem is they're sitting at a table with food that was paid for by that job, a house that was paid for by that job, and their college educations were all paid for by that bad job. Father or mother is telling the kids, don't do what I do for a living.
And that comes from frustration from being at a job where you're not appreciated.
Under-equipped
for sure. The pay structures tend to be lacking. And a lot of that lacking has to do with the consumer end of it, with them not understanding what it takes to fulfill this position anymore. And you got a guy coming in there making, I don't know, $15 an hour at a shop. And I mean, I'm sorry, I don't want that guy changing my oil. Yeah.
And that's very specific to the automotive industry, you know, where I'm thinking wider service trades in general, blue collar in general, yeah, but you're talking very specific to the automotive repair industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I agree, but it's,
I got a friend that's a pipe fitter, and I mean, he is all about that's the greatest job in the world. He's the proudest father right now because his kid just joined the union and was accepted. But I mean, first year apprentice, this kid's going to make $20 an hour.
But we the whole industry or the whole trade consistently devalues itself.
Exactly.
1995 oil changes. Are you kidding me? You know, lost leaders. We blow off certain level tasks. We kick it to the greenest technician in the shop, you know, be it tires, be it the inspections, be it the oil changes, whatnot. And we deem them simple. And we take for granted the skill set required to do some of that stuff and the knowledge to do that stuff efficiently, accurately. And, you know, with these inspections, the experienced eye of somebody that gives a rip about what they're doing can find these problems early on, saving the customer money, essentially, rather than waiting for it to break down and be expensive.
I see where you guys have gone with this, and it's an interesting pathway. Recently interviewing someone who said in the Midwest, the average wage of a technician slash mechanic is $40,000. And then I've also, you know, gotten some great thoughts from educators that say, listen, you can come out of a two-year degree program without the level of debt that you would normally have gone to college. Yeah, you need to buy some tools. And there are so many opportunities in this industry, not just being a technician, but there's a lot of jobs in the industry that could grow from a person who wants to get ahead. It's wage, which I think is so critical. It is labor rate. It is very profitable. I've been talking to business coaches, and they say if you're not making enough net profit, you can't pay the techs. So there's these really, real interesting dynamics at play. I don't think there's one answer here.
No, it's a vicious.
Clearly not. That's why it's a discussion, you know.
Yeah, and it's a vicious circle.
It is. And so will it take guys, the owners, you know, Pete, you own your own place. Bob, you work for somebody. Matt, you work for somebody. Is it going to take, you know, progressive owners that want to say, listen, these issues don't exist in my shop and in my world, and I'm going to do something about it?
I don't see how you could compete doing that when you have big box stores running marketing campaigns and things like this with loss leaders and things like this.
But do I have to compete with that loss leader? Do, you know, I guess is the success of my business depending on what's going on outside of it or inside of it?
Both.
Is that 1995 oil change someone you want in your shop?
I think you need to understand as a business owner that you need to go after certain clientele and be ready, willing, and able to fire other clientele. And until you can build your business with the clientele you want, it's tough because you're going to compete against the guy down the street that is under-tooled, is paying his people horrible wages, all the things that make it difficult to compete. Well, if you decide I'm not going to compete with those people, I am going to build a business that services customers and they understand what service is, then they start coming around and understanding, and then they start telling their friends. There's a big investment with that.
Monetary and time.
Correct. Yes. It's not happening overnight. I heard something probably 10 years ago or so, and this was basically about children today and college grads type of a thing or something.
You're not going to go on a millennial rant, are you?
No. That they want. No, you would fall into this, I think.
The millennials?
The age range.
Technically. I'm right at the edge, yeah.
But it was basically, kids today want in 3 years what it took their parents 30 years to accrue. And I think that's the same thing with some businesses. They want it magically to happen, and it's not happening. It's long days, hard work. And employees don't understand that when the lights go out and you go home, if it's a good job owner, they're still working for another 10, 20 hours.
Weekly, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. They're adding another 10, 20 hours a week on top of, or above and beyond the employees.
At least another couple of hours a night, the 2 o'clock wake up, the worry about accounts receivable, cash flow, operating profits, and feeding the mouths of the people that work for them.
Right.
And you know, being a good CEO of a business, your careers depend on that. I'm talking with Jonathan Ciccelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Now, you're visiting shops every day, so when you put product in the hands of the technicians and service advisors, what are they saying?
Going back to Federal Mogul's long-term presence in the industry, they already know the product, and some of them we don't have to say much about. It's the newer product, the latest innovations that we come out with that just blow people away.
So, Jonathan, you take that brand new OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
They look at it and are kind of speechless for a couple seconds, and they just can't deny that it's an awesome-looking product, and they can't deny that it's going to work fantastic on their vehicles.
Now, another phenomenal product line that is just one of the most iconic brands in the entire industry is Moog. Now, there's a lot going on with Moog.
The newest thing with Moog is going to be, I think, the most important thing to the shops is the newer design ball joint that we created, and that was off of technicians' responses to a boot design.
That's that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
Absolutely. And as soon as I pull that out of a box and show a technician or a shop owner, they just were like, this is amazing.
So, Jonathan, would you say that you're a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts and all the premium products?
Absolutely.
And a champion for all the training?
I'm very big on training. I've always been in training since I've been in the professional field. So just to come back and support on the other end has just been an awesome experience.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. Let's go back to competency, the lack of competency, guys. Where are the solutions to, you know, a tech is listening to this and he says, you know what, I got to up my game. What's the first or next step?
Well, I think I'm torn a little bit about it because, you know, if you've got somebody that's passionate about something, and I'm not saying that automatically they'll be successful, but it gives them a leg up. If they really care and they want to learn how to do this really well and they invest the time and hopefully, you know, can get hooked up with an owner or manager that helps fund some of the, you know, training, and they make a, you know, do their due diligence to take that training and apply it in the Bay and spend time at home reading and thinking, I think that's a big step forward. But I think we have big hurdles to overcome, right? Because the days of the kids growing up in an environment where mom, dad, grandma, and grandpa fixed stuff is long gone. The days of the lawnmower not starting in the spring and dad or even mom knowing a little bit of a process to do to fix it, get it to run, you know, get fresh gas in it, check the spark plug, check for spark, blah, 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 are long gone. They call up to find out how much it'll cost to fix the lawnmower. They get told that it'll be probably as much to fix it as it is to buy a new one down at the hardware store. Goes in the dumpster, they buy a new lawnmower. I gotta guess that a lot of kids have never had their parent replace a tire on their bicycle, especially the rear tire, because if they take it to a bicycle shop, again, what they have to charge to do it is probably as much as it is to buy a new bike.
You're talking about convenience and time being the most valuable piece in people's lives today, and that they, yeah, I don't know how to fix the lawnmower, I don't know how to repair the bike, but relate that concept.
They're not getting that mechanical aptitude. They're never seeing a process, either a diagnostic process, critical thinking, taking something apart, putting it back together. Now, you know, it's video games the convenience.
You have to, in order to appreciate value in labor or diagnostics or any of these things and be willing to pay for it, you have to have some mechanical aptitude or appreciation for, you know, whatever machine you're working on. or having work done in order to see the value. Is that kind of the point you're going for?
Actually, my question was, you guys said, listen, there's a tech shortage, there's a lack of competency. And my question was about the competency. And I don't mean, and I mean through the ranks that we currently have. And if someone said, hey, listen, I heard these guys talk, they're right, I've got to up my game, what do I do as a working C or B tech in the industry to up my game?
Pete, you told me today to talk less and listen more, so I'll let you go first.
I never said anything like that.
Oh, by the way, I just want to let you know that, Bob, I thought you did a great job in our first roundtable, Bob. Just a great job.
I was talking about Matt when I said that.
Yeah.
I thought that was clear. Apparently, I'm not a good communicator. So, you got my text, right, Matt?
So, I guess I will go. I was on a Facebook forum, and some guy's asking for information. And what I tend to see is, and I can throw myself into this at times, that you're going in to try and do a job, and instead of doing your due diligence, you go for wanting a silver bullet right away. And you're asking people, hey, how do I fix this? How do I do that? Instead of doing your job. And I see this on internet forums. I see it on Facebook. This one thing on Facebook, I told the guy that he should go to Vision because it was coming up. And I got chastised that the guy doesn't even know what Vision is. This, that, and that. I'm like, well, how the hell is somebody going to know unless somebody tells them? And until we stop enabling people and telling them, no, you got to do your due diligence, they're not going to work for it. That's my opinion.
It becomes a crutch, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have pay-for databases.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Right, but I think the issue is that eventually, if you have success using that, it becomes more difficult not to use it anymore, right?
Right, or you start to explore free avenues such as Facebook.
Right.
I don't want to pay for it, and I get it for free. I'm not even willing to provide enough information for somebody to help me. But, hey, I got a Chevy. Doesn't start. What do you think? Huh?
You're saying that a level of competency that you see is steeped in quick, fast, silver bullet stuff that really isn't engaging a total level of diagnostics that makes what you guys do so precious?
I think it's pure laziness myself.
I don't really think it devalues what we do.
No, I don't mean that. I think it elevates what you do, right? because you're, as much as you're going, if you will, the long yard on the process, you're learning every step of the way. Is that where that bridge or that gap, that competency gap is? I'm trying to understand how you guys look at the world that you live in.
And I think Bob kind of mentioned it in the previous podcast, actually, where when you go down the rabbit hole, you're in pain and you're learning. But if you're not doing the work and you're just trying things, it's not very painful. I'm not saying it has to be painful. It does for me. Otherwise, I don't learn.
There's going to be people listening to this that says, listen, we need to beat the clock. We've got to go for bullets.
I wanted to bring that up. I think that's a contributor to it.
That's an ownership issue.
Right. But, you know, it's hard when it's all about billing those hours, and you're getting X amount of time to do a diagnosis, and you have this database you can refer to that you hit with a certain high level of accuracy. Man, I mean, you do that a few times and now you get a car in. It's hard to not just skip a few steps and go right for the quote unquote bullet, because ability is, you're probably going to hit and you're going to get paid a lot, or not a lot, but you're going to get paid some diagnostic time that was really just playing the odds, playing probabilities.
It's good.
How do you get away from that? Okay. It's tough. It would be very tough to get away from that. And you're asking about worldview. Well, I would say mine is, how does it work? I want to know how it works, almost to a really extreme level, almost.
Bob, did you say he's in the super minority?
Yeah.
Got it.
I don't think that wanting to know how it works puts him in the minority at all. I think being willing to do the work to find out how it works puts him in the minority. With the amount of topics, technical topics, technical data, if you just look at what's on YouTube, and the amount of hits, a lot of these technical, you know, whether it be, you know, electronics, anything technical, the amount of hits they get is staggering. So there's definitely interest. It's an effort issue.
Yeah, like I said earlier, laziness is the biggest part. I mean, let me go out and ask for this.
We don't call people lazy anymore, okay? We say lack of effort, okay? Oh. Or minimally exceptional, or, you know, these types of things. We use that nice, soft language.
Thank you, Pete, because, you know, you read the contract. Politically correct, Bob, or don't show up.
Right.
Perfect. Oh, good. I got shit to do. I got a floor to clean up. Have a good night.
I guess I have to explain, since we're doing audio only today, what Bob just did. No, I won't. Never mind. We'll let him keep guessing. You know, I guess the silver bullet works once, and then you go back for another one, and you keep going back for another one. The shop's profitable and it's making revenue.
Big time.
It's a combination of what the shop owner needs and what the tech prefers. And so it's not going away.
I don't think it's what the tech prefers. I think it's what the owner of the shop is requiring or allowing. What is the perception the tech has? And what is the effort the tech is willing to go out and do? I worked at one of the best shops I've ever worked at. The owner was, do whatever it takes. If it takes time to figure it out, take the time, figure it out. I want it figured out right. He did have all the resources as far as the silver bullet sites and all the rest of the stuff. So you could go there. You could find out that kind of information, but he wanted you to double check it. He also allowed to, or didn't allow, he had lots of factory tools in the shop. So you had the ability to go grab a factory tool. There was lots of resources at hand. But your perception as, like myself as a flat rater, is, okay, I still need to get it done in a certain amount of time. How much of it is my perception that I need to do? Okay, maybe I can skip that step of the diagnosis and move on. And I think it depends on your level of competency and effort that you put in as to how well you can go about skipping steps to move the thing forward faster. I have no problem with jumping on, I'm going to say it, Identifix. Let's get the elephant out of the room real quick. In using that service, but I'm not going to use it just to look at, oh, they've replaced 100 of those. That's the part that's wrong. I'm going to look at it. Okay, that's a high probability. Let's go and test that component and make sure what's going on with it.
Sure. And they do a very nice job of also providing those test steps. They don't necessarily line up with my approach or how I would verify that, but generally I see solid logic in their method.
All the guys that give the feedback are previously dealer techs, right? So, they have that thought process of that particular manufacturer's diagnostic step.
They're platform specialists, I believe.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Guys, question, and I know this has also come up on the podcast about getting paid for diagnostic time. And is that why the silver bullets are so quick and easy to get to? Because the customer is not necessarily sold. The job is to what it takes to really go into discovery.
Depends on the shop.
Yeah,
it does. And so depending on the shop,
see a lot of guys that will go ahead and, you know, they got their initial hour. They do some things and they go, well, I don't know. I need 2 hours more. I need 3 hours more. So, you know, maybe they call them up and get 4 hours, you know, get the customer to agree to pay whatever for four more hours.
I worked for a guy, this is a number of years ago, so things weren't quite as complicated. But his philosophy was, no matter what it was, you only charged 1 hour of diagnostic time. And his feelings were, if you can't figure it out in an hour, the customer's not going to have any faith in you. He said, and so his feelings were, if it takes you more, roll that into the cost of the repair.
That you're not going to get if it's a fuel pump for $1,100 or what, you know, yeah. But, I agree with that. I agree with that position to a point. I don't believe that anybody should pay for my time learning.
Why?
You should, because that's what you're paying me to know.
Oh, so a doctor never learns while he's doing stuff?
In all honesty, I don't really care what they do, because I think their whole industry is bullshit. It's clearly broken. There's some broken facets to their industry in the accountability department.
The reality is, though, you can't know everything.
Right, but I'm investing.
There's too much. Yeah. So you have to be able to learn some stuff.
But what are the skills? What are the skills we have to know? And what are the skills that we're paid to do? Is where to find that information quickly. What tests can we do to make these decisions quickly? I'm not talking about intermittence. I'm not talking about, you know, network issues where, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, really obscure oddball stuff that comes up every, you know, sixth Tuesday of a month or whatever. I don't know. The sixth one.
I just think there's a lot going on. You have misconceptions of the motoring public. They're still under the delusion, I guess, if you will, that seriously, that we plug a machine in, we plug a laptop in, we plug in a scan tool,
eyebrows.
It literally tells us what's wrong with mm-hmm. the car. They don't really understand that, not unlike the medical profession, there are certain tests that are done. You know, they hook us up to an EKG, they put us in an MRI. But now we have to interpret that data. It doesn't just start flashing on the screen, you know, what's wrong with this patient. Similar with the scan tool. And then after that, there's more tests, right? There's, you know, component level using an oscilloscope or a meter of some sort. And I think that's a great misunderstanding, a misconception on the motoring public's part. And that's, I think, where Bob's talking about at the front counter, educating the client, explaining these tests, maybe even showing them these tests. To try to provide some value, because otherwise diagnostic time is like selling air.
Right.
How do you associate a value to that? And then also kind of going with what Pete's saying too, if we do know that you're very familiar with this car or this car line or this engine and it's has this symptom and you know within 5 minutes of what's wrong with it, are you charging the client 5 minutes or do you charge them a basic diagnostic fee, because you also need to be rewarded for that experience, for that knowledge, for that skill set, for the equipment you have that allows you to acquire that.
So you're paid to learn?
Define learn, right?
Well, if you've gone through the process and you felt a lot of pain on the first one and a little less pain on the next one, and you're 10 in and you can figure this thing out in 5 minutes, but you're still charging an hour. Did you get paid to learn?
Yeah, got a reward on your investment. And, right. I'm yeah,
guys, and it may take two or three to just get to break even.
Yeah, wipe that grin off your face, Bob. Jesus, did you stick me? I mean, you got me.
Ugh.
Brutal.
I live for it.
As you should.
So what are you guys going to do in 10 years? What are your plans? I mean, think about you, I don't know, did you enter the industry at 20? And, you know, what were your 30s and 40s like? And I don't know, are you on the cusp of the millennials, Pete?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome to Walmart.
We might be bad examples.
Welcome to Walmart.
Yeah, well, okay. But, you know, I don't know, Bob, are you in your 40s?
I'm 53.
53. Matt, you're in your 30s?
40,
early 40s. So, what do you see yourself doing in the decade of your 50s, Matt?
I just think I'm a bad example because the nature of my day to day is not as physically taxing as the guys, you know, busting their knuckles.
Yeah, but you just told me what I wanted to hear. If you were a heavy repair guy, you may be saying, oh my God, my back may not make it into the 50s. But what you're saying is, you're doing diagnostics. Are you trying to tell me that you could do this for a long time?
I hope so. I think if I could keep my mind and then some, mobility, I think I could. I don't see why I wouldn't be able to. As long as I can stay on top of things, keep my mind, you know.
We'll ask the kids about that.
Right. And then, some mobility that, I think. Continue for quite a long time, but hopefully.
The challenges that are in our industry, though, you guys are diagnostic specialists. Bob, you have a very interesting, unique job as a mobile guy. Are the challenges that are going to come up in the industry going to have an effect as our average technician starts getting older? And again, it goes back to one of the things we talked about is the shortage. Part of the shortage is going to come from the retiring out.
Absolutely.
But I think that the reality is that you're always going to need young guys. Hopefully they'll be smarter than me when they're doing the heavy work and they don't beat themselves up as bad as I did. And then they will grow and move towards being their diagnostic skills being the asset that they move towards and are able to live off of by their mid-30s. But I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I was doing heavy work until probably 45, 46. And it takes a toll on the body.
Well, do you and Pete, in your day-to-day, when you're going to these shops, do a lot of the shops that you go to have one guy who does all of or the vast majority of the diagnostics, the electrical stuff, or are a lot of them bumper-to-bumper?
Bumper-to-bumper.
I would say in mechanical shops, it's generally one guy that's going to go... unless it's a huge shop, they may have multiple. They have one primary guy. I'm pretty used to dealing with one person regularly at a shop. You know, at most shops I go to.
Because I'm thinking like for the spots. The issue I think you're talking about is that as you get older, I don't think this trade or this industry really rewards you for experience and wisdom, knowledge. Right. It's about turning hours. Really, especially if you're in the wrench spinning portion, it's important to be able to turn hours. You have to bill hours. That's how you get to the higher tiers in your pay system. And as your body ages, it gets harder and harder to hit those targets. And then, we're more prone to injury. One bad twist, and now are you ever going to be able to hit those targets? So if you don't have the computer skills and the personal skills, to interact with the public, to move into like a service advisor role, I don't know where they go.
So are you suggesting that we're going to have even more fallout?
Potentially. I just think that a lot of times, I don't think I'm full of it, that a lot of places, a lot of careers, the older you get, the more valuable you become. Unfortunately, I think in our trade, that may not be the case. As long as you can turn the hours, you're very valuable. But if your body starts breaking down, it's hard to get rewarded for what's up here.
Okay, where is the knowledge base going to go I understand. I hear what you're saying about the back-breaking work of the repair side, but you three are diagnostic specialists, and that's where our industry is headed. And you know, I can't wait to just talk about ADAS systems and autonomy someday with you guys, and maybe that's what we should do in episode 3 of our roundtable.
Sounds fun. Yeah,
that would be great.
That would be fun. My thinking is that have you read anything? Do you foresee the future as to where the diagnostic roles that you play will go in the next 10 years?
Do you guys mind? I have some fears about this, Carm. If the competency level maintains or even starts dropping, I think with the progress with a little bit with AI, artificial intelligence, but especially just computer power and the ability to write programs, that more and more diagnostic decision-making will be taken out of a human being's hand. That whether it's going to be off-board diagnostics, like a scan tool system that plugs in, we're seeing a little bit of it with guided fault finding. A person will be walked through a diagnostic process to come up with the issue or the culprit. And they're going to do it for two reasons, right? Competency and then also just service equality. And I mean that as if I take my car to Bob's Repair, or let's say it's a dealer, probably more a dealership than an independent. So Bob's Chevy, I take my car to Bob's Chevy and Bob takes 3 cracks at it and he just can't get a handle on it, doesn't know. And I'm complaining to a friend of mine. Bob. Right. Well, I'm complaining to a friend. Hey, you know, I've had my car to Bob's Chevy for a few times. They can't get a handle on what's going on. It's really frustrating. Oh, dude, you got to take your car to Pete's, you know, GM. They got a really good guy down there. And I take it there and it's a first time fix. GM Chevy can't have that. It's like McDonald's, right? Wherever you go, the Big Mac tastes the same. They need the same service availability to all their General Motors customers, their Chevy owners. So the more they can take out of human hands, it makes sense.
It's a cost thing too at that point, just like McDonald's workers or fast food workers, whatever, want $15 an hour and they're replaced by machines to take the orders. As technicians want more and more money, at some point they'll be able to demand more money because there will not be people able to do the job. So if they can come up with AI to level that playing field.
AI, or even as you age, maybe you could work doing augmented reality.
Yeah.
Or supporting that.
But yeah, Carm, I just want to clear. Well,
I want to talk about augmented reality here in a second with you, Pete.
And I want to be clear. I don't mean that to sound doom and gloom, because we're seeing it in other services, in other trades, other industries. We're seeing that in the medical field with Watson. Watson eventually will be taking diagnostic decisions out of the human's hand. The doctor's not making the call. Watson will. Why? Because he can process way, way more information and make a way more accurate call than a doctor possibly could. Human limitations.
And you have a database for every variability, all the variability.
Look at your entire family history. I mean, you can pull in an insane amount of information.
I'd be surprised if they could, you know, decode the DNA and in the near future.
Almost an instant DNA reading. Yeah, yeah. You know, Matt, you say, I love what you're saying. When I think of the resilient industry that we're in, that won't arrive instantly. That'll evolve and it'll come up. We'll all figure out how to the scanners, the equipment, aftermarket stuff. There's not enough bays to handle the cars, and if the car manufacturers want to sell their cars, there's got to be a lot of places to get them fixed. Will they get fixed quicker, better, faster in the future? With all that computer power, you make great points, Pete. I had a Derek Kaufman, managing partner at Schwartz Advisor, on a few weeks back. Whoa, what a futuristic episode. And he talked about augmented reality.
Yeah, I did listen to that podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. He talked about how they're repairing elevators with augmented reality today. Have you ever held up a laptop or a phone with an augmented reality and see how it superimposes whatever you're looking at?
Well, years ago, I bought Google glasses.
Okay, all right. Okay, because
I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, you're a geek, and yeah, you're a
reincarnated. It's all now.
I know.
Everybody knows now.
Yeah.
Wow.
They just sit. They just sit there.
Geek
you
squad.
Have to put them on.
Oh, these are the details did not follow through on. Willing to part with $1,500 for a pair of glasses like an imbecile, but
whatever. All right, I'm over it. If you are,
yeah. Oh yeah, I was. I didn't give a shit. It was cool.
So, what did you think of that? Of his story on augmented reality?
It's extremely viable. I think we actually have some people in the industry. I don't know to what extent. I think, Matt and I talked about it a couple of days ago. We have some people implementing some level of augmented reality as tech support now. I don't use any tech support, unfortunately.
You are tech support.
I've been called worse, so thank you.
Buy better.
But I guess my point to bring it up is that that's an evolution of a diagnostician today to be working, if you will, in NORAD, in the nerve center, you know, in the mountain, supporting the work that's being done. It's almost like it's going to not necessarily be a cottage industry, but an evolution of the tech support that sits behind you on the 800 numbers or, you know, online, where you may hover over an engine with a tablet. And wherever you move it, you're going to see where the sensors are. You're going to probably be able to look at the exact readings that you should be getting from your scan tool on this augmented tablet. Wherever you move, it changes the face of the tablet, whatever you're looking at, whatever you see. But I'm sure that no DIYer puts it in their hands and figures out how to fix their car, because I think you're going to have to be an A-plus diagnostician tech to really know what to do with the information that you get.
Well, that's the case now, is that the data that you read and you see now and the research you do in the service manual, along to try to make sense of the data that you're reading on your scan tool or your symptoms, the case is now that you need to know how to interpret that data. If it goes augmented and there's databases on, you know, this is what this should look like. I think the cost of interfacing with the vehicle is going to be substantially cheaper. And that'll, of course, provide a threat in that department with the do-it-yourself.
Okay. And I hear what you say. And, you know, and I thought a lot about that when I heard Derek talk about that. And I said, oh, my God, that may open up a whole new DIY level. They're going to walk in and tell you because, you know, they have a $10 app on their smartphone that's augmented. And they're going to come in and say, well, now fix it. But it goes back to what we talked about earlier about the convenience. You know, time is currency. Who's going to have or want to figure out how to unlatch the hood cover to get inside? If cars are going to drive us around, and the reason we have autonomous cars because we're go, 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 who's going to want to stop and DIY their diagnostic problem?
Well, and let's face it, the DIY, I think, is going to become less and less of an issue, period, because I think less and less people moving forward are going to own vehicles.
Why do you want to own it? If they're autonomous cars, why the heck would you own it? You just get on your phone, dial up a car, it comes, gets you, drops you off. You have zero maintenance. You don't have any of the headaches or liability. You don't have to garage keep it, whatever. You know, and there's lots of enticing elements to that.
Yeah, I thought about what could I do with my garage man cave.
Pile it with junk. That's what will happen. You will have free space and shit will collect.
Okay, no car, but I'll have a nice tractor in my garage.
Why? There'll be one tractor for the whole neighborhood that cuts your grass.
Honey, I just called the autonomous lawnmower.
Take that out. I don't want anybody knowing my idea. That's going to market tomorrow. I don't know why. I spilled it. You know what? I just came up with it right now.
It's not that unrealistic, I believe.
No, it should happen tomorrow.
Well, I think Husqvarna already has one or has had one for years where it's not a tractor, but it's a push-size mower that charges solar and mows your yard constantly.
I've seen them. It's like a Roomba. It's like a Roomba for your lawn. Oh yeah, yes, I've seen them. $800-900 or something. I've actually seen them at a home show once, and I saw this little darting across the front yard, and I had to stop and look at it. You know, I was chasing.
Well, you said tractor, so it's
You're right. I did.
Yeah. So,
but that's okay.
You can do dethatching.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes.
Thursday at noon, honey, the lawn Roomba is coming to cut the grass, so stop bothering me.
When are you going to get your lazy out of here? Cut that grass. There you go. Don't bitch at me, honey. Bitch at your iPhone.
There you go. Yeah.
You're an iPhone guy?
Oh, no. I don't drink that Kool-Aid. No. No. I have self-respect. There's a lot. Bad things happened if I have one in my hand.
Hey guys, what would you tell a young high school grad who
don't get an iPhone?
Besides not getting an iPhone, yes, that would be a start. I don't know. Isn't it 50-50 Apple Android out there?
Yeah,
I have no idea.
I don't know.
I would have no idea.
So let me do a survey here. Are you guys all Androids?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And Windows?
Yep.
Yes.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, I don't see any art on the walls behind you, so okay.
I did strongly consider putting some up.
It's really great, Pete, to look at the concrete wall behind you.
Give me the dogs shooting pool. Should
have gave your kids. I have the dogs playing poker over in the other
room. Oh, there you
gave your kids some chalk. Hurry up. Give me something. Yeah.
Look, just go ahead and throw the Velvet Elvis up, will you?
There you go.
If you had a chance, and maybe you guys have, to go out and speak, you know, on career day or in front of a high school class about joining our industry, what would you tell them?
I have a rough time with that.
As do I. I've had that opportunity and I had to decline.
Because?
I've done it. You focus on...
Yeah, but we need you guys to do this stuff. And why are you having a rough time with it?
Because we have this issue where the cars are becoming more and more complex, right? We hear that all the time. Training classes, technical training classes, shop management classes, cars are getting more and more complex. And we need the talent coming into the industry to handle this complexity. However, those that are smart enough to handle that complexity are smart enough not to get in the industry. Because, you know, I hate to keep beating this to death, but if you can get a job in a cubicle making more, less wear and tear on your body.
People aren't made to work in cubicles. It's hard to find happiness from what I hear. I've never worked in a cubicle because I know I can't do it. I can barely sit still for... Yeah, but
Pete, you're right. Matt, if you had a chance to talk to 50 kids and you changed the thought pattern. I remember speaking to a couple of technicians who got their lives changed and re-energized their career because someone talked to them about all the good that they're doing and what our industry is about and that they may have found their purpose. Don't you think you could change a couple of people's attitudes on what they want to be when they grow up?
Absolutely, because there are some really, really good things about what we do. I'm just saying that it gets rough when they can find other careers that reward them monetarily.
There's a huge difference between what you're saying and what Carm said, though. You're talking about kids that are not in the industry, have a choice of a wide gambit of prospects, where what Carm had talked about just now was guys that had their lives changed by going to a certain training or something. Well, you're already in the industry. You're already, and it's a situation that maybe you've been frustrated and now you've gotten some life breathed into you. But the reality is, before that life, you're looking for a way to get out and you didn't see a way out because this is the only thing you've ever done and you don't know how to do anything else.
you know, Bob, my point was really in mentioning that is to try to get a better response from Matt, and I don't think I'm going to, but because
give you that response.
No, because in certain levels of people's careers, they've gone to some really good training, and they've woken up. Wow, okay, I have a mission, and I have a purpose, and I get it, and I have value. I enjoy what I can't believe it. I enjoy what I do. With that parallel, getting a chance to talk to some young students who wants to work with their hands, but they're not sure if it's plumbing, contracting, if it's welding, if it's electrical, if it's woodworking. And here you get up and you say, listen, I'm a diagnostician. Let me tell you about the career, the job. That's my point is you may be able to take one out of 50 and say, wow, that was really interesting. I love it. Computers, you know, and all this continuous training. That's kind of me. I'd love to do that. Don't you think that we need to do more of that in the industry? That's my point.
I agree with you. Like I said, there's a lot of great things. There's solving the puzzle. You know, if you're a puzzle solver, if you like problem solving, if you like solving the mystery, it's great. And there's a level of instant gratification, right? I mean, it's usually, you know, short amount of time, you know that you've figured out this problem and maybe even repaired the problem. So there's that instant gratification. There's also just helping somebody out. If you enjoy helping somebody out, this is a great industry because you're doing that. You're solving a problem for them, you know, be it diagnostically or just, you know, mechanically, as well as ensuring that their potentially second largest investment is safe. You know, if they have kids, if they have families, this vehicle is safe not only for them in the car, but everybody else around them. It's a big deal. You know, there's a certain level of value to that, a lot of value, both personally and industry-wide.
Thanks, man. I love the whole concept. And I think you mentioned it the last time we were together, the puzzle. And, you know, you could paint a picture like that for a young person, and you just may have steered them to come and work in our industry. Bob, have you ever done that? Ever gone to talk to Career Days, high school?
30 years ago, I think.
All right.
Up to a junior high. I think if I went today, it would be along the lines of you don't need to necessarily go to college to be a successful person and have a successful life. I think that I would roll out that like Mike Rowe is talking, there's a lot of things that you can do blue collar that will pay you a good earning living. I mean, you're not going to become a millionaire type of thing, but I mean, it's, I guess, what do you want out of life? Do you want to be a millionaire? Well, then become the shop owner or something that can have multiple shops and that kind of thing. If you want to be a successful person that has a nice family and a nice house and all the rest of it, you know, you could do a lot of blue collar jobs, and automotive is one of them that, I mean, you can have all of that. All of them require some dedication and some work.
I have never seen more news articles about skilled trades, just on the local Buffalo News. Last couple of nights in a row, they've been doing stories on the skilled trades, and they start out the story by saying, you have an electrical problem at home, you may not be able to find an electrician in the future. And on to the plumbing idea and to woodworking. And Matt, you just so perfectly brought it up. People don't know how to fix their lawnmower or the rear, you know, or their bicycle. And they don't know. They need that kind of help. And one day they're going to pick up the phone. Number one, it'll take days or weeks to get someone there, and the price will be astronomical because supply and demand. And that's why I think it is so critical that we as an industry get out. Why? Because the plumbers and the electricians and the welders and the woodworkers and the carpenters, they're all going to go out and do this because they know that a grassroots recruiting level is going to have to be a must.
I started a little early. I did the Take Your Daughter to Work Day on this past Thursday.
Okay.
She's seven. She's seven, but start them early, right?
Good.
You know, it might be a little too grassroots, like seed level, but whatever.
So Pete, what would you say to a junior or a senior student in high school? What would you tell them about our industry?
Well, as I kind of told you, I've had that opportunity. I declined to do it because I struggle with brutal honesty.
Okay.
And I don't paint a sunshine and puppies picture of anything. Not how I do things.
But you're earning your living right. Here. You don't have a passion for what you do?
Oh, I totally do. Yeah. Would I recommend anybody else do what I do? I don't know. I don't feel I'm in a position to make that, to make a recommendation.
I see. I really don't. I'm just looking for your motivation here.
Are you struggling with the idea that with your skill set, you might have been able to go a different direction career-wise and be using the same skills, but reaping more benefits?
Yeah.
I see. So brutally honest is maybe you wanted to have a different pathway than you currently have.
In all honesty, I gave it no thought.
Okay. All right.
I came up in the auto. My parents owned a shop. So when I was a young, you know, I was 12, 13, I never gave a thought to a career path. I was
born into it.
And I in no way think that is a bad thing at all. It's been very good to me. You know, I never made any planning or, you know, had any different admirations. So for me to make suggestions with no experience in seeking and searching and finding what I wanted to do or what fit my, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Although a lot of people know nothing about things and make recommendations all the time. I mean, that article that we were talking about earlier is a perfect example of that. Know nothing about it, write a feature article about it.
I don't think this, you know, I don't think you'd put this in there, but I think this is the thing we struggle with, Carm, is most of your stuff is very upbeat, very, you know, work hard, pay your dues, and reap these rewards. And I think what we struggle with is the unfortunate reality of, especially coming out of school, and even now, my electrician buddies, my plumber buddies, my construction buddies, my welder buddies, when we're sitting around the poker table playing, they showed up to my house in a brand new pickup. They got boats. They've got cabins. And I don't.
Could I make a suggestion, Matt? Start dating one of them?
Yeah.
You can have those things too.
But that's an unfortunate reality. And guess what? I've never had my plumber friend come over and do any plumbing in my house. I've never had my electrician friend ever come over and do anything electrical in my house. I just do it.
Yeah, Matt. New scan tool.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Not only do they make more than I do, they don't pay anything to do their job. They show up and they've got a van. They've got tools in the van. Maybe they'll go buy something that they like better. But they've got $1,000 or less invested. I've got $100,000 invested.
There's your house.
And that's your cabin. Right. And I know you want to keep things on the up and up, Carm. That's why I concede that this.
I'm glad you brought it up, Matt, because it is another one of those elephant in the rooms.
It is. It's.
We need to talk about it.
I worked for a guy that he bought all of the factory tools in the shop, and he was like offended that you would want to buy your own factory tool or scope or anything like that. And the flip side of that is, if you own it, you know how it works better than the guy that doesn't own it. I owned my own scope. I'd owned my own scope for years. Nobody else in the shop could use a scope like I could use a scope. I'd be walking by, hey, come look at this. Why can't I get this to work?
Well, you got to plug it in.
Yeah, exactly. No, you don't have to pierce the wire with a 3-inch hole.
Should I use a razor blade and scrape off a solid inch of this?
Yeah. But it's one of those things that in order for it to really work well, the shop owner needs to buy multiple tools that everybody could touch and hold and work and become efficient at. I used to have keys to a shop that we ran out of work, or it was the end of the day, and I would stay and I would play with cars. I'd put new tools on it. I'd try to, and every shop I worked at after that, for the most part, was like, no, when the cars are done, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't have the opportunity at home to be able to set up really nice to do the testing that I would like to do.
Especially in the winter, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have the ability to do that, you know, it now it takes away a little of the passion or something. It's a difficult thing to nail down.
Yeah. On the other side of that coin is the shop owners. I have several that I've helped get the various factory scan tools. They just lose their mind when their guys can't use it. Their guys can't get, you know, they don't know how to use it.
They can't use the aftermarket tools.
Right.
But Pete, whose fault is it? The training is there.
Right. So how frustrating, yeah. Is it a half-hearted effort on that shop owner's part? Is it laziness? I don't know.
I was in a shop that I worked at that had a Modus, and the guy didn't even know it had a scope in it. He didn't know that you could graph the scan data. I'm like, how do you fix a car? Yeah.
Not only that, why'd you pay all this money for a code reader?
Right.
Yeah.
There's frustrations on both sides of that, the tool discussion, right? I've always bought my own stuff, or mommy and daddy got it for me. Either way, you know.
Bob, you are going to open up your own shop. I'm not. This just work with me a scenario, and you know you've got.
Tell my wife.
No, I won't. Oh God, no.
It's got to be on the DL.
No, well, I'm still saying you'd buy, you know, scan tools. You'd buy everything that the shop needs. You would own it. Someone would come to you without having to have that $100,000 investment. You may be able to take a young graduate out of a 2 or 3 year post-secondary school and say, hey, look at here's your bay. Here's your training program. Here's your tools.
I think that if I was going down that road, in order to satisfy what's in me as far as the investment thought process would be, yeah, okay, I can see buying all the tools. I mean, wrenches, sockets, whatever. And then the people that came on board would probably sign a contract that they would stay with me for X amount of time to show that their commitment. But I think my commitment back would be having such an environment that they would never, ever want to leave. If I'm paying them well, and I've given them the tools, I've given them the training, I have loaner cars for all my customers, I think that it would be money hand over fist, because my employees would be happy. They would want to take care of the customers. The customers would be happy because their cars are serviced well. They have something to drive while their cars are being serviced.
Okay.
It would be a large sum of money to open that shop, but it doesn't have to be 12 bays. It could be 3.
So next time we get together, we also need to talk about a training bond. It's something that I've recently heard. I don't want to get into it too deep right now, but you kind of brought it up. You know, I want you to sign something that says you're going to stay with me for a while because I'm going to invest in you. And we'll put that on the shelf and something to think about down the road, because I think you guys may have something interesting to say about that. And I just give you an example. Many airports are hiring firefighters today, and Southwest even does it when they hire their technicians and their airplane mechanics.
When they beat up passengers, they're able to take
care of
them.
Yes, exactly. That's how it works. Yes. Big wrench to jaw. Yeah.
the pipe fitters basically expect you to be around for X amount of years or pay them back.
Because we're going to invest in you. We're going to invest in you. So you try. It's a legal document. You pay for their lawyer to read it. And if they owe you, if they leave, because you're investing in a amount of money in an annual training program over 5 years. Now, you add the tools to that, for an example, as you were talking about, and it gets interesting. It gets exciting. But it also gives you a commitment to take this person to, you know, you're actually building an apprentice program right inside your own company, but you're paying that person. You could be investing $5,000 to $8,000 over 4 or 5 years in them, and you have to have them stay, but that's what's going on in some other industries. Where
$5,000 to $8,000, that could be one. I mean, that could be 4 years ago.
Just in aftermarket training, places like Vision, where you would want to have them continue on that cutting edge.
So that's, I mean, send some guy to Vision. I mean, depending on where you live, that's $1,000.
Grand.
Easy. Yeah.
So that's $4,000 a year with one training event.
Yeah, that's right.
So it would be,
well, maybe 10 it's
G's better, you know.
So maybe it's a $10,000 or $12,000 contract. Think about it. We'll talk about it on. You guys will come back for round three. Yes.
Does anybody listen to this?
No one listens. 9:30 on a Tuesday night, and I have nothing better to do.
Poor guy.
Yeah. You're killing me, Bob.
Bob said something about the tool investment. If we go to the medical field, right? Doctors spend six figures or more on their educations and a lot of years of education, correct? And that gives them some value, right? They have to earn X amount of dollars to have a life, earn a living, and pay that back. In our world, we don't really have as much invested in education, which I would argue is a big, big mistake. I'm not saying it should be equal to a doctor, but it's nowhere near where it needs to be. These year and a half, 2 year programs, I don't think cut it. But then we have the equipment investment, and I'm not sure the salary and benefit packages reflect that investment, right?
I think the reality is that if you went to, and by no means am I a union person. I believe in private sector unions, I guess, to some extent. But the reality is, if you go with a good union, the automotive union is not a good union. They put in, 5-year apprentice programs where the guy makes a decent living and learns the trade and can become a master at the trade. Yeah. And that is something that the automotive world has failed to understand, the pay structure and the training structure.
Because if you have a master, you know, a master tech, a tech, whatever, that higher level tech working in your shop, and he's doing really, really, or her, he or she is doing really, really well for themselves, that gives everybody under them reason to strive. That's kind of, I mean, that's a little bit what you're saying. So you come in as an apprentice and you're looking up to that journeyman, or you're looking at that master, and they're at the, you know, they're earning good livings for themselves, and also telling them about, you know, showing them how well they're doing. I'm not saying showing their pay stubs and bragging, demonstrating that, hey, put your time in, kid. Work hard. Listen to what I say. Do what I tell you. Go to these classes and look at this big, bright future you have waiting for you, provided you can hack it as well. I mean,
right. Yeah. No, but I mean, instead, we've got a, I want to say industry, because it's not an industry. It's just a thought process in this world we live in, that the guy that is doing well and has busted his butt to learn all this stuff is paid on flat rate, and he's got no incentive to help the guy under him, because the guy under him is just going to take the easy money away from him.
Yep. Yeah,
so it needs to be a complete paradigm shift.
Yeah,
to fix it.
Yep, I agree. I have an uncle of mine works in construction. He was talking about how the journeymen and masters, when there's a apprentice coming in, one of them will take a shine to the kid and kind of take it. Hang on, why don't you start hanging out with me? And he might be a framer. He might be, you know, interiors. But he sees something in the kid and brings him along with him. The guy helping him out isn't taking a hit.
Right.
Maybe the business owner is. Maybe the contractor is a little bit. But if that apprentice turns into a decent journeyman and later a master, he's making it back in spades, right? And I think our trade is kind of missing that. We're missing that a little bit, because we kind of punish our techs for taking somebody under their wing. There's a bit of a hand slap to that. There's a financial penalty. Yes.
The entire industry isn't paid on flat rate.
No.
At least on the indie side. And I believe that there's an awful lot of shop owners that are building big cultures around team and incentive for a job well done.
For good reasons.
And some sharing of gross margin. There's a lot of plans out there that are creating exactly what you guys are talking about. The antithesis of the flat rate system that doesn't help growth or each other work as a team.
They still pay on an incentive basis to some extent, and it's this adulterated flat rate is what I've seen. It needs, if you really want to get away from it to where it's really a team effort, it needs to be either an hourly wage or a salary, something along those lines, and then maybe the incentive act is a pool that everybody pulled from equally.
And that's what the teams really are, right? The teams?
Yeah.
Depends on how it's set up.
I've seen some great models out there, and they're exciting. But again, with all the different owners, the independent owner out there, everyone runs their business slightly different. And we're talking about universal problems in the industry.
Yep.
But you know, I guess
still in America.
Yeah, we're yeah.
And this is America. This isn't, yeah, and this isn't a knock at all. But Carm, you get subjected to the creme de la creme. Well, yeah, tonight us, but the shop owners and managers that you've been interviewing, they have a very progressive view. We offer this perspective from, you know, the trenches, if you will, and it differs.
And the more shop owners make those changes, make their paradigm shift, grow their business, become the CEO of their companies, the more technicians will recognize who they are and go seek them out. And it may take 20 years, but I think you'll see some kind of shift. What we're discussing tonight could just be old news.
Well, I'm hoping that what happens is, you know, most of your podcasts up to now primarily aim at management, shop owners, shop management, service advisors, maybe
business and coaches, educators,
yeah. And you're adding technicians,
yeah,
you know, like us and a few others,
yeah.
That hopefully the listenership of the technicians rises drastically because we outnumber ownership greatly, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Or management. And now if the technicians hear stuff like this and then listen to some of your other podcasts with your business coaches and your shop owners and stuff like that, they can refer that to their manager or shop owner and hopefully
work together.
Spurn this change that you see and that we desire.
Yeah, you know, I like what you say. And I guess the point is just because you're a technician, you want to just come to the podcast and listen to the technician interviews. Great. I'm glad you're doing it. But stretch yourself and listen to what the owners are talking about. Listen to what the educators are talking about. You know, listen to what the coaches are talking about and broaden your horizon. And allow yourself to make career decisions based on this level of content that exists out there in the podcast. Yeah.
And hopefully vice versa, because they can get a little bit of a reality check, I hope.
Well, we can always learn from each other. I mean, it's just putting yourself out there to be open to learning. I mean, every class I go to, I feel that I'm going there to learn something. Sometimes it's learning how not to do a class, but it's still learning. But you can't have your subject matter and your instructor and all the rest be top of the game all the time. Sometimes you walk into a class and you're expecting something great and you find out it's not so much. Okay, shift gears. What is it in the class that you could learn?
Yeah, and to take that to the next step, we've heard about tech skipping conferences because they feel like they don't get as much out of them as they used to, but they may be missing the fact that that's happening because the training worked. You went to these training classes. You started out, you've never been to a vision, and you went, and you're like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever been to. I don't know if I have room in my head for all this new information. A year later, you go again. A year later, you go again. And then that fourth and fifth year, you're kind of like, ah, you know, not really taking away.
Classes aren't as much because you're smarter.
Right. Your knowledge level is increasing, and you have to recognize that. And it doesn't devalue going anymore because the one or two things you've learned are as valuable or more valuable than the dozens or more of things you learned the first few times.
If you're, in my opinion, if you're skipping out coming because, well, you know, the classes just don't look as intriguing as they used to, and you're not realizing it's because you've grown in your education, you're skipping out on that ability to get together and network with people, and now you've lost out on that knowledge.
Yep.
Hey, guys, for I think the third time tonight, I want to thank you all for being here. Hey, Pete, how did Bob do? Did he listen a lot?
Not as much as I would have liked, you know.
But, all right.
You had just, nothing else to do.
I'm just checking in. Pete Landry, Matt Fonslow, Bob Hype, thank you. You will come back for round three.
Definitely.
Bob?
Only if Pete says it's okay.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Matt Fonslow, Bob Hype, and Peter Landry for another interesting deliberation. I appreciate your transparency and honesty to discuss some big topics that are important to the industry. I enjoyed it. See the show notes for this episode at remarkableresults.biz/E230. There I've listed the top 20 talking points to give you a good overview of the discussion. Please click the share button and send this link to your industry colleagues. This is an important discussion that needs to spread its digital audio wings and be heard by thousands. Now, if you always want to be in on the latest episode release, subscribe to my insider newsletter. Go to remarkableresults.biz/insider. Hey, thanks for your loyal support.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.